We understand that not everybody wakes up as early as Joe Thomas. The Snooze Alarm Survivor Podcast.
Joe Thomas in the morning, thank you for letting us be of service to you. 434-964-1075 is our number.
Joe works out to steal me, works damn near every day. Leaves for work when the sun comes up, drops the kids to school along the way. Joe has everything he dreamed of, all the treasures that he needs. No wonder Joe's always smiling, he only aims to please, yeah. I wanna be a Joe.
Emails also come into Joe at WCHV.com. So at the end of the day, yesterday, only 71 Republicans voted in favor of this debt reduction and or debt ceiling and spending cuts bill. And you know, if they name it the spending cuts bill, that must be what it's about, right? It has to have spending cuts in it. It's got spending cuts in the name of the bill. And the glee with which Hakeem Jeffries and the Democratic caucus are jumping to this. Democrats voted, 165 Democrats voted for it to 149 Republicans that voted for it. The end of the day, they were saying, oh, it's only, you know, 10, 15 or 20 wing nuts that are voting against it. 71 Republicans voted against it. 46 Democrats voted against it. Tim Kaine says he will vote against it in the Senate if they don't take out the Mountain Valley Pipeline. Now, these were, and understand, Chuck Schumer has said, we're not sending this back to the Congress, to the House. So Tim Kaine can't take the Mountain Valley Pipeline out without having to send it back to the House. So, you know, we will see how this plays out. But Tim Kaine says he will not, because he's got a pander. He's got a reelection campaign in 2024, and he can't allow the Mountain Valley Pipeline to come through Virginia. Oh, my God. Now, recall, if you will, just yesterday when KJP herself told us the Mountain Valley Pipeline wasn't in the debt ceiling bill in her own special way. Because only Corinne Jean-Pierre can craft a phrase the way it does. And the part, this is just fun. Do we have the clip?
The bill doesn't really do much as it relates to that project, to be quite honest. Instead, it preserves the largest investment in climate protection that we have seen in history under this administration.
You hear the pivot.
It helps get hundreds of clean energy projects online faster, all while protecting the full scope.
Pivoting
full
so much, she's pirouetting. So why Corinne Jean-Pierre, if I want to play Peter Doocy for a moment, why, Corinne Jean-Pierre, does Tim Kaine say he wants to take the Mountain Valley Pipeline out of the debt deal in order to secure his vote from Virginia if it's not there? Color me confused. But you know it must be a good bill if all, you know, it's got spending cuts in the name of it. You know it must be about spending cuts. So Hakeem Jeffries said President Biden protected the American people from the types of devastating cuts proposed by right-wing extremists that would have hurt millions of everyday Americans. What did I tell you yesterday? We've gone into a place where America is her expenditures. America is no longer about rights, it's about money. It's about who's going to send me somebody else's money. Because I feel horrible about this, because it really isn't the majority of people. but the pandering populists can't help themselves. They've so lost their ability to make any sense of it all. And I think it's because they don't worry about the regular voter. They don't worry about the regular person anymore. They're worried about get out the vote campaigns. They're worried about getting the Zucker bucks into the hands of the volunteers who will go door to door prying votes out of disinterested voters' hands. So they have to do these radical things to portray themselves as X, Y, or Z to get the money necessary to pay for the Zuckerbucks volunteers to go pry the votes out of the cold, dead hands of people still on the voter rolls. To pay people to debase their home communities and to enact slanderous character assassination campaigns against their neighbors so that they don't become registrars like happened to Leo down in Buckingham County. To turn on each other for a percentage of the population that doesn't break two digits. But when people say, Joe, why are you so harsh on democracy? This is democracy. We read Lawrence Reed's wonderful book that he wrote for the Foundation for Economic Education. They'll be out at Freedom Fest with us coming up in July. They're a big part of it. Are We Rome? And we talk about the expenditures and how, you know, as each successive, and I'm paraphrasing him here, but each successive emperor came along with more and more spending from the public treasury. The Senate had no say in it. They had been rendered useless by Caesar because the emperor had taken on dictatorial powers for the protection of the Roman state. Remember, it was a state of emergency. It was homeland security that gave Caesar all this power. He kept the Senate because bread and circuses. But each successive emperor had to spend more and more and more until the value, and it wasn't even an imaginary value coming from the addled mind of Janet Yellen. Back in those days, it was actually the amount of precious metal in the coin. So you could tell how debased your currency was by how little gold or silver was actually used to make the coin. It was less than 10% by the time Rome fell. And remember, Rome fell from within, just like it appears. America is trying desperately to fall from within. And maybe, because we've only known a few of these global empires, this one sort of being the passive-aggressive empire, not empire. Maybe it's just what always happens. You've heard of too big to fail. Maybe empires like this are just too big to succeed. But I think democracy plays a very seminal role in this. And who doesn't want to vote for the person who sends the money, huh?
High Fidelity hosts.
Right at the entrance to Central Park.
High Fidelity Radio.
Where the last of the
Sebring 1075 and 1260 WCHV.
Say you change the Constitution. Well, you know. We don't love to change our
Joe Thomas in the morning, and democracy as a corrosive force against liberty. And it seems so counterintuitive because the sloganeering around democracy is such debasing pandering. And it's controversial, but it's become less and less so as people start to realize what I've been talking about all along when I say that democracy, like so many other things, if used in moderation, is fine. Glass or two of wine is fine. Three or four bottles, not so much. Even, you know, in the medical profession, what was the stuff called? Etoposide. Anything that ends CID, poisonous. It's by its nature a poison. But you use it to kill, in my case, my particular form of lymphoma in the right dosages. You see, we've started guzzling democracy. We've taken democracy and just started chowing down on it. Everything is democratic. We had presidential candidates talking about democratic capitalism, which is, by the way, indicative of pretty much any planning commission or zoning board of architectural review meeting that you go to. How can we get the public to vote against your business or for it? Metaphorically, the four wolves and three sheep voting for what kind of restaurant to permit on the downtown mall. Odds are it will be souvlaki, not falafel. Because democracy always devolves into mob rule. And we see it in the trans, and it isn't even a mob anymore. It's the perception of a mob. It's that perception of not wanting to be seen, not in the right club. And I think, as I sit here, self-anointed Monday morning sociologist, that this is, when we look back on it, through the lens of history, if we do history honestly, or do we wait for some archaeologist to unearth our remains and hope they guess correctly what we were doing? But if we're honest arbiters of our history, it's my belief, it's my analysis, that what has happened to us is that we have become so desperately addicted to likes and follows we have so sadly wound up in such desperate need of coalition that our own value only comes from the size of our Twitter followers. Oh, and you say, oh, Joe, it's easy for you to say you work in a popularity media. What do you know about that? Well, I know one thing, that and maybe it is unique to people who do what I do, the ones who are good and the ones who are, you know, aware of it. There is only one guarantee in the world about radio listeners. And it doesn't matter whether you like top 40 or country or rock and roll or spoken word. The demographics of a radio listener are varied as they are in any population. But there's only one thing I can guarantee with 99% surety about a radio listener. They're sitting by themselves. Listening to the radio is a solitary pursuit. You're in your car, maybe you're carpooling, but you know, if you've chosen the radio station, maybe the other people aren't even paying attention to it. Or they're mad because you're subjecting them to it. And that's the outlier. I mean, most people, if they're listening to the radio, they've got their earphones in, sitting at their cubicle, at their desk, in their car, at their kitchen table, So you are, I can say with fairly confident surety, sitting by yourself. And so while, you know, we're in an industry where we're supposed to have lots of listeners because that translates into lots of people going into our sponsors' businesses, the successful ones understand that it's a one-to-one deal. And I don't know how many conversations you've tried to have with more than one person at a time. It's crazy making. I mean, I've hosted parties at my house, and I've had people grab me and say, "Joe, slow down." You know, because I'm like a hummingbird. I'm just bopping around to people because I go into restaurant manager mode and I'm trying to work the front room, front of house. I'm running. "How you doing? Everything okay? Can I get you something else? And I'm not really having conversations with anyone because I've got to flit off to the next person to make sure they're not being inattended. But that's what our society has become. Our society has become this social media attempt to have the most followers, or to be at least perceived to have the most followers. I'm not sure. You may have heard we were in the Charlottesville Daily Progress Reader's Choice poll under the category of biggest Charlottesville celebrity. You and me. Well, me by name, but you know, the popularity of this program. And I'm pretty sure I know we finished second. First runner-up. First runner-up. I'm fairly sure I would put money on the fact that we finished second to a social media influencer. He's a spokesperson for the Blue Ridge Area Health District by income, but you know, his avocation is social media influencer and apparently devotee of wearing leather. But that's the world we've become. Who's the social media influencer? Who can make the most people do what they say to do? And if I say do this, you'll go do this. And it's a lie, but that's why 5% of the population gets to seemingly dictate terms to the other 95. Because the politicians that we've turned over all this authority to are pandering to the 95% by trying to be seen as popular with those 5%, because it will get them the free advertising that they need to pitch their wares. So, and that is where we have come to. That is how we get to these transgender lectures by the Albemarle County Schools. You know, they're not asking the parents their opinion. They're lecturing you about why you should agree with them. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the transgender lecture from the Albemarle Schools DEI Club, sponsored by Chick-fil-A. Oh, I'm sorry, that was a cheap shot. D writes in, "Democracy is the pathetic belief in the collective wisdom of individual ignorance." It's a good Mencken quote for this hour of the morning. But that's how we've devolved into this, because since the Civil War, we have created this centralized federal government based on individual democratic votes. And it's no wonder it's come apart, because you're trying to get 300 million people to vote for one person. And I don't know how anyone believes that's anything more than a fool's errand, but that's how you wind up with the debt limit and spending cuts bill. Because it must be about spending cuts, because, well, it's in the name, isn't it?
Celebrating Founding Father's Day every day.
No colony has ever broken from the parent stem in the history of the world.
Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm going to be the man who wakes up next to you. When
I go out. Yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you.
But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be the man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door.
Joe Thomas in the morning, I promise you these numbers, and it was a chart put out. You know, VPAP keeps tracks on who gives what to who and where all the money is coming from. And I thought this was an interesting chart, and I wanted to share it. We got talking about it a little bit in an abstract just a little while ago. We were talking in abstract of who gives what to who, and top donors in Virginia, $7.5 million, Michael D. Bills of Charlottesville. Now, he's the guy who comes to Charlottesville to run the papers for Warren Buffett. When, remember, Warren Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, buys all the Richmond Times and the Charlottesville Daily Progress and all those Virginia papers. Now it's called the Lee Group, and I think he's still on the board, but he was the chair of that. And he lives out in Ivy with his wife, Sonia, who is fourth on the list of biggest donors in Virginia at $1.135 million. So the two of them combined, $8.63 million of campaign donations. That's more than Dominion Energy and the Clean Virginia Fund combined. That's almost 10 times more than the Spirit of Virginia, which is Governor Youngkin's PAC for conservatives. So just think about that. That two people have contributed more money to Democrats or political campaigns in general in Virginia than Dominion Energy and the Clean Virginia Fund combined. And you would say Dominion Energy, Clean Virginia Fund may be in, you know, loggerheads with one another. Not always. Two people have done all, have contributed. And I'm not, believe me, I understand. You can give your money to whoever you want, but I can also report on it because you're supposed to do it in public. And these monies go to groups, and I'll get to, we got Charlie on the phone here in a second. I will get to this because it's a connection here. They go to groups. I got this email this morning. You may have received one as well. It says Charlottesville, big block letters in the email. Charlottesville data due at 11:59 p.m. And I'm like, Charlottesville data due? What is it? And I have some Freedom of Information Act requests and some PIO requests into Charlottesville. So the word Charlottesville in block letters in my email, it gets my attention. So I look at the email and I realize it is from a group called the Progressive Turnout Project. And this is another one of these Zuckerbucks groups that's going to people's houses, the ones and twos, the people who are only going to vote when the president's up for election, and then it could be a toss-up. If I like the guy, maybe I'll vote for him. These are infrequent voters. They're going to their houses and prying their votes from their hands. You put it any other way. They're going to them and saying, were you going to vote this year? Nah, it's just the Virginia General Assembly. I don't care. Listen, tell you what. Here's a ballot. I'm authorized to bring it to the Department of Elections for you. How about you just fill it out here, you sign it, I witness it, I put it in this box, and I can bring it to you. I'm a vote harvester. Really? Well, if it's that easy, okay. And that's how people like Joe Biden get next to the bag of other people's money. The Bob Good told us yesterday on the show, $400 billion goes to the federal government in tax collections every month. And they give it out to the people they want to give it out to. And that's why all this money is so important. And it's not just the Bidens, it's the McConnells and the Schumers and the Obamas. The only person who got poorer going into government service seems to be Donald Trump and maybe John Kennedy. I don't know. I don't have the stats on John Kennedy's family wealth before or after his presidency, but sure as shooting, Donald Trump's family lost money after 2017. Anyway, Charlie, thank you for hanging on through that. I just needed to stick the landing on that point before I wandered off of it. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. That kind of goes into what I was going to tell you, is that it doesn't matter, Joe, if we had the House, the Senate, and the President, until you make a fundamental change on how we manage the civil servant of the United States, you're not going to change very much.
Well, what would
it's
you change?
It's unbelievable. Well, the first thing is, Joe, you know they cannot be fired.
Yeah, it is really hard.
They cannot be fired. It's, and if you were to talk to upper-level civil servants who's been in the system for years, the last thing they're going to tell you is that they're there to serve the people. They're not there to serve the people. They're there to serve their clique. When you talk about the swamp, they are the swamp, Joe. And I don't know how you break that.
Well, I think the first thing you have to break, Charlie, and I know you're speaking metaphorically, but I have some specific thoughts on this. It all begins with what are we expecting the government to do? And this whole debt ceiling thing is indicative to me anyway, that we have stopped thinking of the American government as a force to defend our God-given rights and moreover as a funding stream. The government is simply there. America is her expenditures. When conservatives are in charge, conservative things get government money. When liberals are in charge, which is far more frequent, liberal things get money. And that's all America is ever since the 16th Amendment. When you have to give the government your private property, whether they explain it to you or not, and then they give it out to who they deem fit. And so America has devolved into this place where all we're doing is begging people for money. We're really no different than the people in the medians on all the intersections in Charlottesville. We just don't have a cardboard sign. We're filling out a grant application. We're calling our congressman. We're filling out a form at something.gov, hoping to get a little money for this or a tax abatement for that. I mean, all we're doing is begging the government for money. We're not out there trying to create our own things or do our own things. We're too busy hoping that we get a grant application approved from the federal government or even the state government. And so that's the first place, because then the civil servant can go back to actually doing the work of protecting your rights. And you need far fewer of them to do that than you have right now, because right now what you have are all these, you know, they're all like bankers. They're all bank tellers trying to determine whether or not you deserve the money you're asking them for. That's the start, in my mind.
As far as the budget process went, Joe, I don't know why they did not allow the Senate. The Speaker should have said, it's now the Senate's time to come up with something.
Sure.
Then
absolutely.
The Senate comes up with it, and okay, so now the House doesn't own it.
Yep. That's it.
We get sucked into these traps, Joe, like we don't know what we're doing.
Well, and we got played by a guy who can't find his pants, quite honestly, because he said, well, I'll negotiate with Speaker McCarthy. Well, whatever happened to Chuck Schumer? They took that vacation. I was talking to Jonathan Emord, who wants the GOP nomination to run against Tim Kaine. They took that vacation, and there wasn't a peep out of the media. You know that if the House went into recess, what happened on Friday of last week, as the House was preparing to go into its weekend recess, every cable news channel was, the House is abandoning the debt ceiling. The House is abandoning America. The Senate had been on vacation for a week and a half, and not a single word about it.
But then the Speaker, and I do appreciate what he's trying to do, but the Speaker should have stuck to his guns. Hey, we passed the bill.
Right.
Now it's the Senate's turn.
Right. Before it ever gets to Mr. Biden, it's supposed to go through the Senate first. So why is his question should have been, why is President Biden involved? Is he still in the U.S. Senate? It's on Chuck Schumer's desk waiting for him to get back from vacation. And just leave it at that.
That's right.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
You're exactly right. We just—it's like we don't understand what we're playing against.
I think they understand that you know, and it's all about being seen as doing something for someone. So all these Republicans that voted for this, all they wanted to is be able to go back into their district because they're all stuck in this idea that somehow they will be the magic Republican that doesn't get skewered by leftists in the media. And what happens every time, Charlie? They get skewered anyway.
I'm going to lose you, Joe. God bless.
God bless you, sir. And you keep the radio on, but the cell service, I understand how it goes.
Like us. Follow us. Just don't touch that dial.
You don't know where that finger's been.
Charlottesville's homepage, Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
So, let's fix the problem. And because there is a constitutional fix to the problem. And it goes back to what the Constitution originally, under George Mason's tutelage and machinations and concerns, was to restrict what government can do. And I propose a radical idea. Our friends in the tenacious D's love to flog themselves on the altar of separation of church from state. I'm sure you've heard them. I mean, it sounds borderline orgasmic when they start talking about the sanctification of separation of church from state. I want to separate church. I want to separate state from business. I want a separation of state from business. You repeal the 16th Amendment and then restrict what the federal government can send money to, give money to. If you make them prove to the American people on an issue-by-issue basis, not based, well, the president said that 6 years ago we did this, so we can just keep doing it. No. Issue-by-issue, line-by-line, zero-based budgeting. Each allocation of federal money must explain to the American people exactly why they have to pay for it. And for fundings beyond a certain dollar level, it must go to a national referendum. And so, sure, that's a slower process, but it stops the money changers. It doesn't eliminate the idea of somebody else saying, well, if they can tax, but you start with eliminating the 16th Amendment, which gives the federal government $400 billion a month to play with, to play venture capitalist with, for Joe Biden to fly over to Ukraine and say, I'm getting on a plane in 6 hours. If you don't come over, you ain't getting the money. And you know that conversation, wash, rinse, and repeat, happens all the time, and it's not just Joe Biden. So you eliminate the 16th Amendment. Make the federal government prove to the American citizens why they need each dollar they ask for us, not just because you'll go to prison otherwise. And you'll substantively change the corruption in America. And you will put us back into a place where the government is based on defending your rights, not sending me money. I mean, you tell me it's radical. People are like, oh, repealing the 16th Amendment. We've repealed amendments before. Remember Prohibition? I mean, most of us don't remember Prohibition per se. But I'm sure it was in all the history books for a while. When the government discovered it could ban behavior. Ooh, this is fun. What are our prisons full of? People whose behavior we've decided is criminal. It's interesting. The Albemarle County Public Schools held a lecture to lecture the parents of Albemarle County about, you know, why transgender kids need to be, you know, okay, but we'll fill our prisons up with people who take an illegal drug because we've decided their behavior is illegal. And I'm not even taking the side of illegal drug use one way or the other. I'm just pointing out the hypocrisy of this lifestyle is illegal, but this one we're going to give the USDA seal of approval to so that you can get more Twitter followers or whatever, Instagram or whatever followers you're looking to get. Cut off the money and you cut off the corruption. And then guys like Michael Bills don't have to give $7 million into Virginia election races because there's no quid for the pro quo. He's not getting anything out of it because there's no thing to get. Virginia can't send his favored businesses money. Virginia can't send his friends in, you know, the green agenda money. That's how you fix the problem, because never mind absolute power corrupting absolutely. All the money corrupts.
Being tuned in means
Joe Thomas now. Sean Hannity at 3.
Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
Joe Thomas in the morning. Thank you for letting us be of service to you. 434-964-1075.
Turn to where I see a whole lot of people crying, don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Bitch about the present and blame it on the past. I'd like to find you in a child and kick its little ass. Get over it. Get over it. All this bitching and moaning, bitching a fit. Get over it. Get over it.
So, and to finish up what we were saying just before the news, and if you're joining us all in progress, there's still, you know, swirling around the debt limit and spending cuts bill. So you know two things are true about the debt limit and spending cuts bill are true. Number one, there is no debt limit in it, and there are no spending cuts in it. Because if you've learned anything about Washington politics, if they've put it in the name of the bill, you know it has nothing to do with what's in the bill. A couple of quick questions. People had this about the U.S. Senate and the Senate's complicity in this. And I think it was tactical. I think the tactics of going on vacation were perfect, because then President Biden can say, well, I'm not going to sign it no matter what happens. So President Biden ran cover for Chuck Schumer in the Senate by saying, well, whatever they pass, I'm not going to sign it. And he forced Kevin McCarthy, because Kevin McCarthy is crippled by this addled need to be popular and be seen as not Trump. So Kevin McCarthy says, well, let's go negotiate then. When, as Charlie very aptly said, and I've said it before as well, they should have just said, there's the bill. And we've watched Nancy Pelosi do this to Mitch McConnell. So it's not like it's without precedent. And I will point out, now that the Senate is back in session, not only are there Republicans ready to vote against the Debt Ceiling and Spending Cuts Act, Tim Kaine's going to vote against it. See, Chuck Schumer's already said, we're not sending it back to the House. Well, that you're going to have to get Tim Kaine right with something, because there's a pipeline going right up Tim Kaine's chute that he can't stand for. He's already said, I'm voting against it if the Mountain Valley Pipeline stays in the bill. Why? Because Red and the rest of the anti-pipeline activists, paid for by the Soviet Union, by the way, I mean the Russian Federation, funded by Vladimir Putin. I stand with Red means a whole different thing in Southside Virginia than I thought it did. have got Tim Kaine scared enough in his reelection campaign that he says, I'm not voting for this if the Mountain Valley Pipeline's in there. So there they go. So good luck, Chuck, because it'll have to go back to the House if you take the Mountain Valley Pipeline out of it. Let me get to you at 434-964-1075. Good morning. Who's this?
Good morning, Joe. It's Joel.
Hi, Joel. How are you doing, sir?
I'm okay. I'm back at work. So that's
oh,
good.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad you found something, and I appreciate it's been a tough sled. So.
Yeah, but I want to take a different approach, and my approach is, why don't we? I mean, we being the Congress and the Senate, and then I don't know about this current president, but why don't they take a look at getting rid of the fiat currency? Because our money, it money can be basically evaluated by the central bank and I guess how the currency is printed. And if it's not really backed by anything, it's kind of like having a cartoon and you go, well, this cartoon is real. I can pull it out of the bank. I can print more, pictures, and make a longer, cartoon. And that's what they do. They take basically money that we don't have and assets that aren't backing any of the money. And it's just by word of mouth. And they've been getting away with doing that forever. So if you have a devaluated currency, why are you going to worry about having a balanced budget? Because you're dealing with fake money anyway.
Well, this begins, and everyone loves to point at Richard Nixon, who, took us off the gold standard. There's a reason he took us off the gold standard, and it was the Great Society had already begun bankrupting the system. So, when President Nixon comes along and we're already, half a decade or more into the Great Society spending binge, already the poor communities were becoming poorer. So, the government said to Richard Nixon, we need to print more money to send to the poor communities because the Great Society says we have to send it to them. And therefore, he said, okay, well, then we'll do that. And it was a bad idea when he did it, and it's a worse idea now. And the country was gaslit into the idea that the gold standard was making people poorer, when it was really the Great Society spending plans and the family destruction that it was making people poorer. But they couldn't admit that. That's why it's white supremacy now, because they can't admit their policies are what makes people poorer. They have to blame something else. So back in the 70s, it was the gold standard. Now it's white supremacy, whatever it may be. Last thought before I have to run to break.
My last point I'd like to make is, too, The Democrats have taken away our oil industry, basically destructed it. I mean, our economy was doing well with energy.
Well,
energy doesn't mean we run on zero.
Right. No. But that's part of why Tim Kaine's a hard no on the because the Mountain Valley Pipeline and energy production is back in vogue, if you will. Anyway,
Can we call that a bellwether parallel?
I think so. You just did.
We have been around for almost 90 years.
This is a page out of Donald Trump's playbook.
And not a sign of any slowing down.
It was designed to create a media circus.
Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV. This is a special presentation of WCHV News. In collaboration with the Albemarle Charlottesville Historical Society, the biggest local news stories from each of the 90 years since we went on the air in 1933. 90 for 90.
Reporting from the Albemarle Charlottesville Historical Society, I'm Sterling Howell.
And I'm Miranda Burnett.
In 1943, the director of the U.S. Bureau of Foreign and Domestic Commerce, now known as the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, visited Charlottesville to address the Chamber of Commerce. He warned them that pent-up demand for consumer spending could lead to inflation beyond the end of World War II.
Planning began in Scottsville on a project to build a tire and rubber manufacturing facility to support the war effort.
To learn more, visit us online at albemarlehistory.org.
stay tuned for more trips back through our 90 years serving the Charlottesville area and to catch up on previous episodes of the podcast page on WCHV.com.
Thomas in the morning, heading on out, and wanted to finish up on a couple of things. And the Legal Aid Justice Center was holding a forum amongst candidates for the House of Delegates yesterday. And this was Sally Hudson on the role of justice reform, I believe, is the clip here. Do we not have Sally's clip of the? Here it is.
I am a deep believer that the projects that our legislators undertake should be.
You messed it up.
That's okay. Can I use my teacher voice? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
My name is Sally Hudson, and for the last 4 years, I have been serving Charlottesville and Alcohol County in the House of Delegates. And I'm a deep believer that the projects that we undertake ought to be driven by the people we serve. And I have been so blessed to partner closely with the Legal Aid Justice Center, with FAR, with the People's Coalition on so many of the projects that I've carried and passed in my first 2 terms in office. On the housing front, I passed the legislation that is now entitling the City Council to create new incentives for affordable housing construction in our new comprehensive plan.
So, and she goes on, and you hear what I was talking about. This is manifest of exactly what I was saying all along. This is, you could not possibly function without the government helping you out. This is the extrapolation from, well, you didn't build that. And we all sort of joked about, well, you didn't build that. But this is, you didn't build that writ large. This is you didn't build that. You shouldn't build that. And understand that there's a reason for this. So free market capitalism, Milton Friedman, and considering how successful edchoice.org has become in getting school choice into states, Milton Friedman needs to come back and work on free market economics now, since he's been very successful at getting school choice. That was his second stanza, was he and his wife started the Ed Choice movement because he realized school choice is as much important as economic choice. And we mentioned this earlier, the idea that you cannot do for yourself begins with the Great Society, because there was a group of people who had become very poor because we were still in the throes of Jim Crow laws. There were still places you couldn't get work, and the government had started its international adventures overseas to help promote making and manufacturing things overseas rather than in the United States. Because at this point, by the early 60s, our labor policy had become so corrupted that it was becoming more affordable to manufacture something hundreds of thousands of miles away, ship it, still pay a union guy to unload the ship, but that's only one union guy, not the 10 or 12 union guys that would have been involved in making it. And we had allowed, out of populism, out of fear, this idea. And I remember my father-in-law so frequently saying this. He would fight with the rank and file members of his machinists union because they would want more money in their paychecks. And he said, no, the company, we need to make sure that the company stays solvent so that we have jobs, but we're also getting retirement. We don't want retirement. We want the money now. And he would fight this battle all the time. He would get so frustrated. And then by the time he was in his retirement, all these retirees that he had represented were calling him, thanking him for all of their friends were struggling to make ends meet. They weren't because they had a fully funded pension fund that the union had built. And it was how it was supposed to work. It was just a group of people looking out for one another and understanding that, you know, the union doesn't mean anything if the company goes out of business. It's why Woodrow Wilson was so afraid of municipal unions. Cue Michael Payne and his statements on the school, on the city bus driver unions. We have the news item on the CAT voting yesterday to unionize.
Charlottesville area transit workers have voted to form a union. It comes after the city council passed a collective bargaining ordinance allowing city employees to unionize.
City Councilor Michael Payne says he hopes this closes the bus driver shortage in the city.
And I think that's really what it comes down to, is workers having good enough pay and having a voice on the job and good working conditions is what makes them want to come work here and stay here.
So they apparently haven't had that while working for the city up to this point. Never mind the fact that I'm still trying to find out the status of the one city employee that was beat to nearly death with a baseball bat at the city yard the other day. We will report on that as soon as I have any details at all on this, but it was horrific. It was two city employees. I guess one former city employee now, but not arrested from what I understand. But this idea that we have to wait for the government to do it for us is what has ruined the American economy. And we're still generating $400 billion in tax revenue. Look at what we did in Virginia just with some simple rudimentary tax cuts, not even all of the ones the governor wanted to do. And we've had record-setting tax collections since.
Subscribe to the Snooze Alarm Survivor podcast from Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, really anywhere podcasts are distributed.
Access denied.
Except Spotify.
You will respect my authority.